ABC Radio Australia.
Greenland in the Arctic Circle has been the topic of much conversation in recent weeks, with US President Donald Trump keen to bring the Danish territory under US control. Key to its strategy will be the US experience with the Compact of Free Association countries in the Northern Pacific. The US, under its agreement with Palau, FSM and the Marshall Islands, provides millions of dollars in economic funding in exchange for exclusive military access. Kyle Evans spoke with the director of the Pacific Islands Program at the Lowy Institute, Mihai Sora, on whether Pacific nations are benefiting from this arrangement.
The shorthand is that they retain a really high degree of sovereignty. I mean, sovereignty is not an absolute term. And by that, I mean these three Pacific states, they're full UN members. They've got full agency to elect their leaders, write their laws. They conduct their own foreign policy, similar to other fully sovereign Pacific states. But they're also in this mutually binding contract with the United States where essentially, they've delegated their national defense and elements of their national security to the US, which has both responsibility as well as veto, as well as exclusive territorial access. And in return, this was negotiated effectively over a very large sum of money. So $7.1 billion among the three states in separate agreements, so different amounts for each over the 20 years. As well as particular access rights to, education, the labor market, the health services in the U.S. So a country like Vanuatu or Papua New Guinea or Fiji, they don't have similar agreements in place with another larger country or another former colonial power, for example. So that's the point of difference for these three Pacific states that, you know, no matter how the fishery stocks are tracking or the tourism economy is going, the tourism sector, or whatever other avenue for income they have, they always have this floor of steady income from the United States as part of these agreements.
Yes, hence why that COFA funding is so vital and valuable to them. But I guess with that, you know, in recent years, the Pacific, we've seen it grow in importance from a strategic and geopolitical standpoint. Even in recent weeks, we've seen a country like Palau, debate and come to terms with this idea that they might have to accept deportees from America and things like that. You know, even though they are sovereign nations, is there a grey area with that? Like, is there a point where they sort of have to comply with the US in areas that go outside of security arrangements?
Look, I think there's a political reality that they would feel obliged to at least consider something like a politically convenient solution for the United States government with respect to deportees or whatever sort of social, political, legal problem emerges out of the U.S. But I think the overall picture is that, yes, there is intensifying U.S.-China strategic competition. Everybody can see that for themselves throughout the Pacific Islands region. Now, that competition affects different parts of the region differently. Because these three North Pacific states are effectively key geographical nodes in the U.S.'s strategic defense of its homeland, that there is a lot of pressure on them during this period of competition. So the stakes for them are very, very high. You know, they're the backbone of U.S. defense posture in the Pacific. That also makes them a key pressure point for Beijing to push on as it is pushing on the United States. So these three Pacific states, they've attracted more U.S. interests even beyond their compact states agreements. They've also attracted more interest from Beijing. Now, some of that has been positive, where Beijing will use incentives to accommodate its physical presence in those places, in the business sector, in the telecommunications sector, through tourism. But it's also attracted coercive actions from Beijing. And Palau is a really important case study with that, where effectively the Chinese state built up a cohort of regular Chinese tourists into Palau, a key part of its economy, made it an even more important part of its economy, and then effectively turned off the tap when President Whips refused to change his country's diplomatic recognition from Taiwan to China. So then it became coercive. So the end result, of course, is that, you know, these compact agreements, they're more consequential today than they were when they were first signed. They're more consequential in 2026 than they were when they were renegotiated in the early 2020s. That comes with benefits in the sense that you'll have increasing offers from the US and counter offers from China, but on balance, a whole bunch of increasing pressures on these individual Pacific countries as a result of their intimate defense relationship with the US.
Do you think the Pacific COFA blueprint is really the only realistic way that US could attain Greenland? And I guess if so, would it be the first COFA state to exist outside of the Pacific if it were to happen?
I honestly don't think that it is realistic. I think that the key element is that people in Greenland and the government in Greenland doesn't seem to find this idea appealing. So I think it's kind of dead in the water even before it starts. I think what's interesting and what the Trump administration has thrown up is a proposition that seems only remotely plausible. But knowing how willful the Trump administration can be, we're all forced to consider it on its merits because it may still come to pass by hook or by crook.
Director of the Pacific Islands Program at the Lowy Institute, Mihai Sora, and he was talking to Kyle Evans.